I've been asked to recreate my address to the 10th Genie Community meeting in Brussels in September 2006. It was called Beyond the Choir. Now, the first meeting was in Aspen 6.5 years ago in May of 99. My first was a year later in San Francisco at Java One. It was the fourth JCM, and it was a party. The one in Brussels, well, that's my fourth JCM, and there's something about this community and the core developers that draws you back. You can see it in the invitation to come to Brussels for 2 full days of seminars and hobnobbing over fine Belgian beer. Now, every conference giver and every conference goer knows that some of the best moments at any conference happens in the hallways and over beer. The Genie community puts it front and center. Now, in the next few minutes, I plan to build on themes from past beer-based seminars and provide some possible fodder for future drinking discussions. There's little new here, but maybe you can add your own thoughts. 2 years ago at the London JCM, Brian Murphy gave a talk that grew out of a conversation we had had the previous year over beers in Cambridge. Now, we'd been talking about non-Euclidean geometry, and my research had been on elastic curves and hyperbolic two-space. Euclid's fifth postulate says essentially that given a line and a point not on the line, there's exactly one line through the point parallel to the given line. Now, mathematics is all about games. You give me a set of rules and we can play. In other words, give me a set of consistent assumptions that we'll accept as rules for our world, and let's see what we can build. Now, people who aren't mathematicians think that we're very rigid creatures who spend our day adding columns of numbers. Some are, but many are creative inventors who ask, okay, now what's true? So, for example, what if the parallel postulate isn't true? What if we look at a world where there are no lines through that point parallel to the given line? But, you protest, in the real world, that just isn't true. The real world is Euclid's world. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe you just aren't able to step back far enough to see that, actually, you do live in a world where this variation makes sense. This first non-Euclidean geometry is the surface of a sphere. You have to change what you mean by lines. A line is what you get when you walk straight at all times while standing on the sphere. In other words, lines become great circles. Any two great circles intersect. There's no such thing as parallel lines. Whoa, we're definitely not in Kansas anymore. Okay, here's another variation. What if there are two different lines through the point that are parallel to the given line? It turns out that if there are two lines that are parallel, then there are infinitely many. This world is the world in which I lived for several years. It's the world of hyperbolic space. And that was Brian's point. The technology you'll logically adopt is based on the assumptions that you make. People who choose web services instead of Genie just have made a different decision. They've decided to agree on the protocol, whereas Genie adopters have decided to agree on the type system at both ends. Genie has been a niche technology. That's okay. We need to understand, however, what that niche is. What is Genie best suited to do? What does it require to do that? If we can't answer that question, well, we should just go home. If we want to get Genie adopted beyond the choir that joins us on the list and at these meetings, then we need to know who our audience is and how we find our frame. One question is, how big do we need to be? Well, think of Ruby. Ruby was invented in the same year as Java. In 2002, there were about 12,000 people at the Java One conference. 12,000, and people were really concerned. Attendance was half of what it had been before. Was Java dead? Well, there were lots of books still being written and sold about Java, and there were too many Java websites and magazines, but that same year, Ruby had its second conference in the U.S. About 100 people gathered in Seattle. The inventor of the language hung out at this single-track conference with the hardcore American adopters. While Java had millions of adopters in 2002, this language that was created at the same time had hundreds. Ruby gathered a little traction here or there, but it still didn't catch on. Now, two things seemed to change this: the Pickaxe book that helped people get started with Ruby, and the release of Rails. Ruby had a good reference book and a killer app for developers that made development easier. Genie needs a good, short jumpstart book and a killer app. We also need to ask, who is Genie for? Lots was said in the early days about what Genie was good for, but much has changed since then. Think back to the classic printer example. You have an application that knows how to use a printer, and you're somewhere where you have access to a printer that also has a fax installed. The end user can now have access to the fax capabilities as well. That's huge. That's magic. I want my apps to do that. Where are today's killer Genie apps that the end user sees? Well, maybe end users don't matter. Hey, you say, what about orbits? Orbitz is the poster child Genie app. The end users couldn't get their reservations without all the Genie magic behind the scenes. Now, do the users feel the Genie bits? No. But maybe that's okay. Think of another part of your life. Most users couldn't tell anything about their hard drives other than its size, and they depend on it every day. Is Genie at that same level? Is it at the level where users don't need to care? I don't think so. I think there are many great applications of Genie that will be invisible to users, but there also is still an opportunity for desktop clients that provide real value as well. In either case, how do we get developers to care? When Apple releases new APIs for a core bit of technology, they also release applications that show developers how it can be used, and they build end-user expectations of how their user experience might change. Rendezvous, now Bonjour, is just as boring to the end user as Genie, but you allow people to share music, pictures, chat locally, discover devices, and all of a sudden developers understand it and end users want it. But you sputter, Genie's so much better. All right, show me. Make end users want Genie. You have to build the desire. The first time you clicked on a Google map in your browser and dragged the map around, your understanding of how a browser-based application could act totally changed. None of the technology was new. It couldn't have been. These applications had to work in existing browsers. But Google Maps became the killer app that explained to end users what was possible that they hadn't seen before. Google Maps, or at least Google Earth, could have been a Genie app. Can we create an I've got to have it moment for Genie? In other words, one way to get developers to care is to provide value for end users. What's Genie best at? Google Maps got developers interested in Ajax. What's new there? We too have an old technology. We need our Google Map app so that people ask about Genie or whatever we call it. Orbitz is or was a marquee Genie application. How many Orbitz developers know anything about Genie? How many need to? So back when I was in radio, I knew this guy named Herb Wilborn Jr. Herb was a flautist and a good one. He'd carry his flute everywhere he went. We'd be at a show and he'd lean over and say, "You know what this song needs? It needs a flute." Now it turns out, it's surprisingly easy to add a flute to a piece. All you need is a flautist. How easy is it to look at an app and decide that it would really benefit from adding Genie or Java spaces? What does it take to Genie-enable an application? That brings us back to Rails. Rails was built around the notion that if you want to build a web app, there's a set of actions that you'll perform pretty much every time. And Rails hid the complexity of working with the database. Getting up and going with Rails is easy. People may question whether it scales and about robustness, but it does scratch an itch for a lot of developers. The key is this notion of sensible defaults. Do we know how people are going to use Genie? How could we make it easy for them to get up and going? Can we offer one or more Genie out-of-the-box packages that make it easy for people to program in Genie and Java spaces? Then again, do we want to make it easier to Genie-enable a Java application? Maybe we don't want to put such a powerful tool in the hands of so many people. What if they use it badly and Genie gets a bad reputation? Besides, we feel deep down that making this stuff easy is somehow impure. It should be hard, and people should be aware at all times of the potential pitfalls. It used to be the law that a Genie talk had to include a slide on Peter Deutsch's 8 Fallacies of Distributed Computing. Now listen to the preamble with 2006 ears, with post-Ajax ears, with Google Maps ears. Deutsch said, essentially, everyone, when they first build a distributed application, makes the following assumptions. All prove to be false in the long run, and all cause big trouble and painful learning experiences. 1. The network is reliable. 2. Latency is zero. 3. Bandwidth is infinite. 4. The network is secure. 5. Topology doesn't change. 6. There's one administrator. 7. Transport cost is zero. And 8. The network is homogeneous. Now, these are assumptions that developers make. These are not assumptions about end users. So how aware do developers have to be about these 8 fallacies when they're writing code? How much would be taken care of them by a framework and it wouldn't matter? How many of them need to be working as close to the Genie APIs as they do now? Web 2.0, whatever that means, has exposed end users to many of these issues. Our user base has a different set of expectations than they did when Genie was born. Now, I'm not saying developers should ignore these network realities and constraints. I'm suggesting a method of successive approximations. We need to stop thinking about Genie's possibilities based on the world when Genie was released. We also can't spend so much time worrying about where our world will be years from now. Gosling writes that the favorite Sun phrase for this is boiling the ocean when all you need is a pot of tea. We need to think about Genie's possibilities in today's world. The infrastructure of Genie allows for agility. Let's take advantage of it. So here's another question for you. Genie requires Java. Now, what would happen if there were Genies for other languages? We wouldn't expect them to interoperate, but think about an Objective-C Cocoa-based Genie. It would be easy to share the UI. On the other hand, if we're attached to Java, which Java? Java SE is ubiquitous. Consider the number of devices containing SE today versus 8 years ago when Genie was launched. For desktop machines, you can almost assume SE will be there. What about ME devices? Forget ME. SE is beginning to show up on phones and other handheld devices. Do we need to download code into smart cards? Let's get Genie right at the SE level, whether we're talking about a client device or a server. Now that ties Genie, unfortunately, to Java SE, and that means it ties it to the current license wars. What happens to Java on the desktop matters a lot to Genie developers and users, and this means that we're involved in the greater Java wars. We can't just sit on the sidelines and pretend that those fights have nothing to do with us. Think back to where the network was 8 years ago. How many of us were connected most of our day? How many people used dial-up to connect? Now, today, there's still people who use dial-up, and there are problems with ubiquitous connectivity, but many of us find wireless wherever we are. Many of us spend time on the net while we're away from our home or our office, and Genie could help us solve many of these problems. Think of the problems related to dropping in and out of different networks and wanting to discover and use what's there, as well as to connect to what we left at home or at the office. Genie was made for this world. Genie must be more widely available. What if you could count on lookup services being available wherever you are? What if routers were capable of running lookup services? Also, look at what ships in macOS 10. Ruby, soon Rails, Perl, Python, Java. Why not Genie and Java spaces? What if every Mac shipped with these? What if every Linux box shipped with these? Genie must be available. So that leaves us with some questions to ponder. We need to be able to explain what Genie is for. We need a killer Genie application. Genie needs to be easier to get started with just to Genie enable an app. It needs to be easier to develop Genie apps, possibly for different platforms. It must be easier to distribute. We need to worry about adoption by device makers and OS vendors, and application distribution is at the core of Genie's attractive aspects. Now, it's easy for me to stand here and say that the Genie team or the Genie community should do this or that. There are lots of things to explore, and you probably have your own set of ideas. The problem is that there are unexpected consequences from even seemingly benign changes. So let's go back to our math example. When you talk about parallel lines, you know that there are angles involved. So you might even remember how to prove that the sum of the angles inside a triangle add up to 180 degrees. You draw one line through the base of a triangle and a parallel line through the vertex. So it seems natural that the parallel postulate is equivalent to the angles of a triangle adding up to 180 degrees. And it is. In a sphere, there are no parallel lines, and the angles in a triangle add up to more than 180 degrees. How much more? Turns out that depends on the size of the triangle. In hyperbolic space, the angles add up to less than 180 degrees. So would you believe me if I told you that the parallel postulate is also related to the area of a triangle? To me, that's completely unexpected. In Euclidean space, the area of a triangle is half the base times the height. No angles, no parallel lines, but this is a direct result of the parallel postulate. It's not true in a sphere or in hyperbolic space. I can show you later tonight over a beer, but I did want to warn you that making changes isn't always as simple as it may seem.